to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome back to the Disney Nerds Podcast. I'm Sam from samsdisneydiary.com, and this is show number 103. Did you know the Disney Nerds Podcast is sponsored by touringplans.com? That's right, spend less time in line and more time riding Walt Disney World attractions. Visit touringplans.com and subscribe today. And be sure to use discount code 15NERDS for 15% off your Touring Plans subscription today. This week, all the Disney Nerds are in Walt Disney World for the second annual Disney Nerds Food and Wine Festival Sample Fun. Ed, Jimmy, Jen, and myself, we're all walking around World Showcase right now with you, our listeners, enjoying all that the Epcot International Food and Wine Festival has to offer. And of course, you can expect lots of audio from those adventures in future shows. Until then, I thought this was the perfect opportunity to get back to my trip to Disneyland's Diamond Anniversary Celebration. Let's start with a ride on Disneyland's Space Mountain. Space Mountain in Disneyland is different than Space Mountain in Walt Disney World. In fact, you could say it's the complete opposite. It's a single track, not two. Remember, Disneyland doesn't enjoy the space that Walt Disney World has, so they had to have the same amount of people get through a smaller space. So, Space Mountain in Disneyland is two passengers wide, and when you look at the cars, they look more like Walt Disney World's Rock and Roller Coaster than any other attraction. Of course, less the blast-off and the loops. The double-wide cars also provide an excellent sound system and a soundtrack that's unique to Disneyland. Now, I can't wait to hear the Hyperspace Mountain Star Wars overlay that they're doing later this year, but until then, here is the audio from Space Mountain during the 60th anniversary celebration. While you listen, imagine yourself in one of Space Mountain's ride vehicles set to leave the loading station. Wow, that was incredible. And begs the ultimate Disney question. Is Space Mountain better at Walt Disney World or Disneyland? Well, I won't say that either one is better, but I will say that they're different. And if you've never experienced Disneyland Space Mountain, it's something that you should put on your list. Let's head over to Disney's California Adventure and a quick spin on Mater's Junkyard Jamboree. While we're here at Disney's California Adventure, let's take a free tour of the new Carthay Circle Theater. Now, Carthay Circle is the new hub for Disney's California Adventure. The theater itself is a premium dining location modeled after the original Carthay Theater Cinema. And did you know there's a free tour every day at the theater? Now, check the times guide for the time, but after you're done with the tour, you'll be perfectly timed to grab a cocktail at the lounge when it first opens. Now, not only do you get to take the tour with me, but you get to take the tour on Disneyland's 60th anniversary. Does it get any better? I hope you enjoy. Stick around for more audio after the tour.
Wonderful. All right. Big Disneyland birthday, right?
Yes.
Okay. So here at Disneyland, there's always a story to be told. It's no different here at the Carthay Circle restaurant. Each one of the rooms I'm about to take you through plays a part in our story. So you take a look at the room that we're standing in right now, you'll notice that it has a little bit of 1920s theming to it, but more modern. We did this purposely. This room is used as a preview to show you what you're going to experience. We want you to understand the original Carthay before you see ours. That's why all the photos on the walls are black and white to the original view. So you take a look right here. This is an aerial view of the property. It was started in 1922 by a man named J. Harrison McCarthy, a wealthy land developer here in California. Unfortunately, most of his land developments failed after a couple years, so Carthay was his last big attempt to make something grand. In 1924, he partnered with Fox, the movie theater company, to build the theater on property because they needed more pull to the area to sell homes. Now, this is San Vicente, this is Wilshire, and this is McCarthy Boulevard, McCarthy Vista now. McCarthy Boulevard is the only portion he uses his actual name on. Carthay is a play on his last name, he thought it sounded fancy. And the circle portion actually came from the inside of the theater, wasn't an exact circle. So you take a look at the photos on the wall over there. That's the inside of the theater. It's at 1,500 people. Wow. The property was estimated to be around $2 million when it opened its doors in 1926. Now the outside of the theater was Spanish Revival themed, much like the missions out here in California. But the inside was Art Deco with an overlining theme of pioneers coming westward. This is the drop curtain at the original theater. Had a painting on the front of it called Crossing Donner Lake. It's the Donner Party coming westward. Take a good look at it, because we go in the next room, we actually have a recreation of that as well. And then right here, this is the Pioneer statue. It was a fountain that was on this little island right here that was dedicated to his father, who was a pioneer who actually came westward during the 1860s and was one of the men who kept California in the Union during the Civil War. So Harrison was very influenced by his father as well as California culture and history. So Carthay rivaled Grauman's back in the day as the premier spot here in Los Angeles. But with the decline of Hollywood during the late 40s, early 50s, it took a massive toll on the theater. So they tried to renovate it, make it more modern, more appealing, but by the mid-60s, it would start to go bankrupt. And then after a long battle with the city for the property, they'd actually tear it down in 1969. So on the property now, a couple big office buildings where the original theater sat. The only thing really left over from the theater is the Pioneer statue. He's still on that little island right there underneath an oak tree. He's known as Prospector Dan now, kind of an LA nickname. But there are no other markers or anything that state the Carthay ever existed. So now we're going to head into our lounge. So the theming of this room is premieres at the Carthay. So if you take a look behind our host stand over here, you guys see a photo of Walt Disney, his wife Lillian, and Leopold Sikowski from 1941's West Coast premiere Fantasia. As well as on the side walls are pictures from the night of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in 1937. When Walt Disney announced to the world that he was going to make the first feature-length animated motion picture, everybody thought he was crazy. Nobody wanted to see an hour and a half cartoon. Most of the newspapers at the time were calling it Walt's folly or the end of the company. Now, production on Snow White actually started out at $250,000. By the time they were done, it was at $1.5 million. Walt's own house was actually mortgaged to pay for the film. So everything was riding on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. So when it came to the premiere night at Carthay, because of it not being a very popular idea at the time, they only estimated about 3,000 people to show up. Well, 30,000 showed up.
Wow.
Including some of the big stars of the day, Judy Garland, Shirley Temple, Clark Gable and his fiance. Now it's said that Gable was actually sitting in the same row as Walt Disney inside the theater. Now y'all know the portion of the film where Snow White's in the glass coffin and the dwarfs are sitting around her. Apparently Walt looked over at Gable and noticed he was getting a little teary-eyed. It's actually reported a lot of stars are crying that night. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs is a monumental film for that point. Up until then, cartoons are really not taken seriously. They're just something to entertain the kids before the real movie began. If you come over here in the corner, I'll show you another really neat photo. So over here, we have some more premiere photos of Miss Carthay pageant from 1927. It only lasted 1 year. Next one in the corner, another one from Fantasia, some Russian dancers from the opening of the theater. The one in the center is from the night of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. But right next to it, this is a very special photo to us. This is Walt Disney walking out of the Carthay Circle Theater. He was there for the Silly Symphony's premiere of Ferdinand the Bull in 1938, which later he won an Oscar for. But that's not what makes this photo unique. The photo itself has been used numerous times by our company. If you go over to Steakhouse 55, the fine dining restaurant at the Disneyland Hotel, you'll see the same photo on their wall as you enter in the lobby. But ours is the first photo released by the company of Walt still holding a cigarette. Up until the point of the Carthay Circle restaurant opening, none of these photos will ever be released, or the cigarettes will be actually taken out of the photos out of respect to Walt, because he was not fond of people knowing that he was a smoker. So even back in the 30s and 40s, publicly, Walt Disney did not want anyone to know that he smoked. So this same photo over at Steakhouse, he's just kind of doing this. The cigarette's just not there. Now if you come to Disneyland a lot, you'll notice as cast members, we have a Disney point. Does anyone know what that is?
Two fingers.
Yeah, it's two fingers. So the way we explain it to our guests nowadays is that there are some cultures out there who find offense to someone pointing with one finger. This is true, but the origin of it goes back to Walt. We have lots of photos of him showing dignitaries and celebrities around Disneyland pointing out things. Well, in the photos, we would just remove the cigarette from his fingers, creating the Disney point. Now, from the wallpaper to the roof paper to design the carpet, these are all 1920s and 30s designs that were actually used back in the day. They actually tried to replicate the carpet as much as possible, the original at the theater. If we come over here. As you can tell from our lanterns right here, the Seven Dwarfs have been hard at work making sure we have the shiniest diamonds inside the Carthay for the 60th anniversary. Normally, these are exact replica lanterns from the theater, and they're also made by one of the same companies who made them from the original. Now, down here in our bar and lounge, we do specialize in old-school cocktails from the 20s and 30s, as well as appetizers and small plates. So if you don't want to go upstairs and have a big meal, please check out the lounge. And for the 60th anniversary, in our Manhattan and Martini cocktails, we are actually using an iced diamond. Right behind us, we have... On display are some items from the movie The Reluctant Dragon, 1941. These are on loan to us from the Walt Disney Archives in Burbank. The Reluctant Dragon is not a very well-known Disney picture, but it's actually a very important one. See, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and most of our Disney cartoons to that point were made at the Hyperion Theater, which was actually a dairy plant before we actually purchased it. So because Snow White making us so much money, Walt wants to build a new state-of-the-art studio on Buena Vista. So everything from the pastel colors used on the outside of the buildings to make you feel warm and comfort, to the way that the windows were positioned inside the buildings to let natural sunlight in for the animators. So Walt was pretty proud of it. So we made a movie kind of showing it off. So the bust right there is a caricature of the main actor in the movie who is invited to the Disney studios to have a meeting with Walt Disney. He kind of stumbles through every department trying to find Walt, in the process showing us, the audience, how Disney animation was made back in the 40s. It's actually a really cool film. And it's on Netflix. Yeah, those are Lasseter Family Wines, and they all have unique labels on them from each of the Pixar films. So right here on the wall, we have a recreation of the drop curtain from the original theater. This is Crossing Donner Lake. It's the Donner Party coming westward. Now we kind of find it funny that you can see the Donners right before we go upstairs to eat. At the original theater, there was many paintings of pioneers and Indians, but the theming of all the paintings had to do with the struggle they had to endure to come westward and start a new life. And so that's why they used the Donners on the original curtain. Now, if anybody needs to, please take the elevator upstairs. I promise it won't drop. Otherwise, just follow me. Sorry. So right here, we have a very famous photo of Walt Disney at the 1939 Oscars, which was held at the Biltmore Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. He's receiving a special Oscar for Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Now, this is the first time that the Oscar would ever be changed for anyone. We gave him one big one, seven little ones, obviously for the dwarfs. It was presented by Shirley Temple. Now, besides Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs being the first feature-length animated cell motion picture, it also grossed over $8.5 million by 1939, so in 2 years. Back then, your ticket was around 10 cents, if you can put that in perspective. This honorary Oscar was Hollywood going, well, Walt, you made more money than all of us, congratulations. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs will hold the highest ranking movie up until the release of Gone with the Wind, which also held its West Coast premiere at the Carthay Circle Theater. Now, on the premiere night of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, there was actually a restaurant right down the street that was offering a meal before you went to go see the film. It was a three-course filet mignon dinner for 75 cents.
Oh, this way.
Welcome to our main dining room. Now, when you walk in here, we want you to feel like you're walking into the theater itself. So you take a look at our kitchen window. It's shaped like a movie screen. As well as all the seating in this room is very wide open, we did this purposely. A lot of restaurants in Hollywood would actually have wide open sections where they would sit their stars so people would see that they were dining in their restaurants. Now, take a look in the wood grain of these tables right here. You may notice something a little odd. Does anybody see it? Yes, you may see a face. If you look, you'll notice that there's a crown, two eyes, a nose and a mouth, and the back of her cape. This is the evil queen from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. She's all over the table. Circular ones. I guess that's what you get when you use enchanted forest wood, right? Speaking of the enchanted forest, if you look above you, this is a mural of the enchanted forest from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Now, can anybody tell me what type of flower this is right here? It's a lily. So why do we use lilies inside the Carthay? Does anyone know?
It's white.
Yes. So we use lilies year-round, upstairs and downstairs, as a tribute to Miss Disney, Lillian. Right this way. All right, welcome to the premiere room. Now, there's three great things about this room. Number one, it has doors, so it's your own private part. Number two, if you look underneath the table, you're going to notice that it's sitting on a limestone replica of the Snow White wishing well from the movie. Don't ask me how we got in here. And number three on the wall over here at the top is the first published photo of Walt and Mickey, and at the bottom is the last published photo of Walt and Mickey. On the other side, you're going to see a photo of Walt Disney when he came to California in 1923. Now, if you take a look at that building behind him, that's actually a garage. That's his Uncle Robert's garage. That's where Walt and Roy founded the Disney Bros Studio out of 92 years ago this year. Now, what's fun is about six blocks that way off of Euclid is the Stanley Ranch, the Garden Grove Historical Society. They actually purchased that garage back in the 80s when the owner was doing a renovation of the property. So now you can go over there and see the spot where Walt and Roy started it all. Now, this room sits 10 to 12 comfortably. It's the only room inside a restaurant that you can reserve. It is a $1,000 deposit. Now, if you have 10 to 12 people, that's not a hard number to hit. Also, we're standing inside the tower right now. The outside of the tower is the only portion of our building that is exact replica to the original theater. It's 3/4 scale. Now, if you follow me, we're gonna head towards Hollywood. All right, welcome to the Hollywood room. Now, to finish the story, you've seen the preview, you've been to the premiere, you come upstairs and dine inside the theater. Now, this room is themed to the accomplishment. These are Disney people winning their Oscars. So if you take a look over there, you'll see Walt Disney, Julie Andrews, over here, Phil Collins. Now, can anybody guess how many Oscars Walt Disney won in his lifetime? There's actually two answers.
It's the most ever. He won more than anybody.
Now, the correct answer is 26. Now, yes, he is the highest Oscar winner of all time. No one's ever come close. The runner-up has 8, and that's another Disney artist, Alan Menken. Now, the second answer is actually 33. See, Dave Smith, the founder of the Archives, likes to add the extra 7 off the Snow White Oscar. So it's up to you which number you'd like to go with. You follow me or get it? All right, here we come from, because here comes a long one. Okay, so can anybody guess what our address is here at the Carthay Circle Restaurant? It's a number, it has something to do with our history, and I gave it away numerous times, see if you're paying attention.
1937?
Yeah. Actually, you're the first one to get that. It's kind of fun.
Wow.
Yes, so 1937 Carthay Circle, the year Snow White and Seven Dwarfs premiered. We also have signature house biscuits here. They're like Hush Puppies, but they have cheese, bacon, jalapenos in the middle. Now, how many things come in an order?
7.
No, 7.
You have some experience.
Yes, again, I have one for all the doors. All right, so I always save this one for last. It's my favorite. Walt Disney always used to say that it all started with a mouse, but it actually started with a little girl named Alice. This is Walt and Roy on location shooting one of the Alice comedies in 1926. Now, the Alice comedies were 57 short silent cartoons where Alice, the girl on top of the camera, would go into imaginary cartoon worlds and have adventures with her friend Julius Katz. Mm-hmm. If you go on Blade of Mrs. Street, you'll notice there's a company named that. Now, the girl on top of the camera, her name is Margie Gay. She's the second Alice in the Alice comedies. The original was Virginia Davis. She's the one that you'll mostly recognize for those cartoons. She's the one with the long curly hair. Well, people started complaining about how they want to see more of the animation and less of the little girl. So Walt started using her less and started paying her less. Her family pulled her out because they thought she was going to be a big star. Unfortunately not. This is the girl who replaces her. There will ultimately be two other little girls before Universal asked Walt to make a different cartoon. Now, the original Alice comedy, Alice's Wonderland, was Walt's last project that he did with his Laugh-O-Grams company in Kansas City, his second company. He finished the cartoon, tried to find a distributor there, but at the time, no one really wanted it. So right around then, the little company goes bankrupt. Frustrated, Walt decides that he wants to come to California to pursue directing. At that moment in his life, he thought he had done everything he could with animation, which is kind of funny. He's only 22 at that point, so he can't really blame the guy, right? So, $40 in his pocket, cartoon in hand, he comes to California. Now, he already had family out here, his Uncle Robert, but also his older brother Roy. Roy was out here on the West Coast getting treatment for tuberculosis, which he got during World War I. Now, out here on the West Coast, they actually had veterans hospitals where you could come get treatment. But back then, there was not much they could do for you. So, when Walt got out here, he actually pursued the directing thing a little bit, sneaking into Universal a couple times, and also his idol studio, Charlie Chaplin. But for some reason, he gave the comedy one last shot. Out of that, he ran into a New York distributor, a lady by the name of Margaret Winkler. She decided to pick up the comedy and sign for 11 others, which was great because Walt had not been eating much. So with this good news, he ran to his older brother at the hospital. Well, Roy decided that Walt was going to need a lot of help starting a new business. So the next day, he checked out. The crazy part is that Roy will never have another problem with tuberculosis the rest of his life. Oh, the door's going to open.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah. Okay. So Margaret Winkler plays a very important role in our Disney history. She is the lady who introduces Walt Disney to a man named Charles Mintz. Charles Mintz was a distributor for Universal Studios out of Los Angeles and New York City. Margaret and Charles got married, and so when that happened, all the comedies went over to Universal. Well, Walt didn't mind that at the time. He thought he was going to get more money and more distributing. But when Universal took over, that actually wouldn't be the case. Even back in the 20s, it cost Walt Disney around $2,000 per cartoon to make a profit at the studio. But when Universal took over, they started sending him $1,000, $1,500, and saying that times were tough. But history will just show that Mintz was just not a nice guy. So the comedies were fairly successful. They lasted from 23 all the way up to 1927. But Universal got bored. They decided they wanted something new, something fresh, maybe something involving a rabbit. So Walt and longtime friend and animator at the studio of Iwerks sat down and came up with Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. Now we all know Oswald, right? Mm-hmm. Some way to Mrs. Street now. When Oswald came out in 1927, he was actually extremely popular. So popular that the contract came up for renegotiation. So Walt wants to make sure that in the new contract it states he can get the amount of money per cartoon to make a profit. Because there are actually many times you take the little amount that he got and throw it into the next production just to keep the company going. Sometimes making nothing at all. So Walt goes up to New York to sit down with Mintz. Well, Mintz doesn't really like this idea. And at that time, he informs Walt that actually you're going to keep making those cartoons, but for less money. And all your animators at your studio, I've actually secretly been buying them off of you, besides one loyalist of Iwerks. And your Oswald character, well, you don't own the rights to him anymore. Universal Studios does now. Yeah, you pulled a fast one. Mintz just did something that a lot of people did back in Hollywood, cutting out the middleman. Well, the middleman was Walt Disney, and he'll later pay for it. So the next few days of negotiation, Walt decides it's not worth keeping. Drops the character, drops the contract, sends a couple telegrams out here to Roy and Ub saying, not to worry, I'll explain to you when I get home. So when he gets back out here to California, all three of them sitting down in Walt's garage start going over different publications and magazines and character designs because they need something fast. All their money's tied up into Oswald. It's either do or die at this moment. Out of this comes Mickey Mouse. Now the crazy part is that all the animators who decided they're going to Universal for more money had to work off the contract at the Disney Studios. So Mickey was made behind closed doors, secretly. As far as everyone else was concerned, they thought the company was going belly up. Now Mickey was silent just like everyone else at the time. They started production on Plain Crazy, then Galloping Gaucho, and Risey started work on Steamboat Willie. Oh, and by the way, Ub Iwerks, he drew it all by himself. 24 frames per second. Which if you know any animators, that's crazy talk. Where Isaac started work on Steamboat Willie, a very famous movie would come out, The Jazz Singer, the first sound movie. Walt is heavily inspired by this, and he decides at that moment that he wants to make Steamboat Willie the first sound cartoon. So once again, after dark, everyone's gone home, they start syncing sounds and music to the cartoons. Walt actually had a couple actors come in and try to do the voice of Mickey, but none of them could do it quite as good as he could. So he'd actually be the voice of Mickey Mouse for a long time. So when Mickey Mouse, Steamboat Willie, the first sound cartoon comes out in 1928, it'll actually blow Oswald and all the other competition right out of the water. At the time, if you could believe it, all the big companies thought that sound was just a fad, that silence was the way of the future. So Oswald and another popular character, Felix the Cat, well, they didn't catch on to that, and they just slowly drifted into history. And well, Mickey Mouse is Mickey Mouse. So without these people betraying Walt, we wouldn't have Mickey. And if we didn't have Mickey, we definitely wouldn't be here today. All right, folks, I want to thank you for coming today. If you'd like, you can take the elevator or the stairs. It's up to you. Otherwise, have a magical day.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you. And you guys may have noticed that I cut a little bit of audio from that tour. So make sure if you're at Disney's California Adventure that you check out the free tour of the Carthay Circle. It's incredible. And there's no cost. It's part of admission. And when you're done, head down to the lounge. Have yourself a cocktail. Now, let's head over to Disneyland and Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. Now, here's a cool piece of history. When I was there for the 60th anniversary of Disneyland, the day of the 60th anniversary, Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln was about to celebrate its 50th anniversary. Remember, it was introduced for the 1964 World's Fair and came to Disneyland in 1965, a week after the 10th anniversary. That's pretty cool. Let's listen into Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. Now, you're going to hear a lot of similarities between this show and the American Adventure show over in Epcot. The similarities are interesting, but the differences make it a must-see. Here's great moments with Mr. Lincoln. Stick around for more audio.
If you will pass through the doors leading to our theater, we welcome you to Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Please stand back behind the dark red line. We're going to go ahead and open up. Please watch your step. Show is 15 minutes long. Welcome, everyone. Just a couple of reminders before we do get started. Please no eating, drinking, smoking, photography, or video recording of the show. As courtesy to everyone around you, if you do have cell phones, please remember to place them on silent mode just for the next 15 minutes. At the end of the show, the doors on the right are going to automatically open for you. If you do need to leave during your performance, please only use the doors on the right side of the theater. You can push through any one of the doors, walk left through the golden curtain, and you'll be back at Main Street U.S. This show was originally produced and directed by Walt Disney himself for the 1964 New York World's Fair. Came here to this theater in 1965 on July 18th, so the Lincoln Theater is going to be celebrating its 50th anniversary this Saturday. This show produced a technology called audio animatronics, and it was the very first time they used the technology for a human figure. But they did have a show before Mr. Lincoln called the Enchanted Tiki Room. It's still there in Adventureland. But back in 1963, Jose the Bird was the prototype for Mr. Lincoln. Now, Mr. Lincoln has been remodeled about 4 years ago, so he's the latest audio animatronic once again at the resort. He's even newer than the Jack Sparrows you see in the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction. He's actually so advanced that if you're towards the front and you know how to do so, you could literally read his lips. He's that articulate. Great pod and pleasure we present. A few great moments, Mr. Lincoln.
Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome you to Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. Himself. For at that time, very few people outside Illinois knew very much about this man from the prairie.
I was born February 12th, 1809, in Hardin County, Kentucky. My father removed from Kentucky to what is now Spencer County, Indiana, in my 8th year. It was a wild region, with many bears and other wild animals still in the woods. There I grew up, I was large for my age, and had an axe put into my hands at once. And from that to my 23rd year, was almost constantly handling that most useful instrument. I think that the aggregate of all my schooling did not amount to 1 year. At 21, I came to Illinois. Thought of trying to study law. Rather thought I could not succeed at that without better education. I borrowed some law books, took them home, and went at it in good earnest. In 1854, the law profession had almost superseded the thought of politics in my mind, when the repeal of the Missouri Compromise aroused me as I had never been before. What I have done since then is pretty well known. If any personal description of me is thought desirable, it may be said I am in height, 6 feet 4 inches, nearly, lean in flesh, weighing on an average 180 pounds, dark complexion, with coarse black hair and gray eyes, and no other marks or brands recollected. Yours very truly, A. Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln became president faced with the terrible threat of civil war, a thing he dreaded, yet a calamity he was prepared to meet if he must.
Without union, the Constitution is only a piece of paper. I know there is a God, and that he hates injustice and slavery. I see the storm coming. I know his hand is in it. If he has a place, work for me. And I think he has. I believe I'm ready. And with God's help, I shall not fail.
April 12th, 1861, Fort Sumter. The cannon spoke for war. Civil war, violent, devastating. Now had come the reckoning, the supreme test that would decide whether a republic founded on liberty could survive the terrible strife of men's passions.
Proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure.
10 brief sentences. So simple, so direct. Abraham Lincoln had not expected his words to live beyond their temporary moment. But time and history would dictate otherwise. And so today, his Gettysburg Address is immortal, a rich and treasured part of our country's heritage. We pay tribute here not to a man who lived a century ago, but to an individual who lives today in the hearts of all freedom-loving people. His prophetic words are as valid for our time as they were for his. And now, the skills of the sculptor and the talents of the artist will let us relive great moments with Mr. Lincoln.
The world has never had a good definition of the word liberty. And the American people just now are much in want of one. We all declare for liberty, but in using the same word, we do not all mean the same thing. What constitutes the bulwark of our liberty and independence? It is not our frowning battlements, our bristling seacoasts. These are not our reliance against tyranny. Our reliance is in the love of liberty, which God has planted in our bosoms. Our defense is in the preservation of the spirit, which prizes liberty as the heritage of all men, in all lands, everywhere. Destroy this spirit, and you have planted the seeds of despotism around your own doors. At what point shall we expect the approach of danger? By what means shall we fortify against it? Shall we expect some transatlantic military giant to step the ocean and crush us with a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe, Asia, and Africa combined could not by force take a drink from the Ohio or make a track on the Blue Ridge in a trial of 1,000 years. At what point, then, is the approach of danger to be expected? I answer, if it ever reaches us, it must spring from amongst us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we ourselves must be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we must live through all times or die by suicide. Neither let us be slandered from our duty by false accusations against us, nor frightened from it by the menaces of destruction to the government, nor of dungeons to ourselves. Let us have faith that right makes might. And in that faith, let us to the end dare to do our duty as we understand it.
To imagine that great moments with Mr. Lincoln evolved into the Hall of Presidents and all of the presidents. Absolutely incredible. Thank you so much, Walt, for audio animatronics and great moments with Mr. Lincoln. Now, I want to leave you with fireworks. This is Disneyland Forever, the fireworks show specific to the Diamond Anniversary. Now, if you head over to samsdisneydiary.com, you'll see a video for World of Color Celebrate, and you'll see the latest Paint the Night, which is the nighttime electrical parade at Disneyland, episodes 60 and 61, respectively. I attempted to capture video for the fireworks, and it's just not possible because the fireworks absolutely consume you. Imagine standing on Main Street, USA, looking at the castle and the fireworks and being completely surrounded with video walls on all of the streets and all of the shops on Main Street, or being closer to Cinderella's castle and Matterhorn Mountain on your right, transforming into a volcano with Nemo flying across the sky. You can't describe it, and you can't capture it on video. So here's the audio. Disneyland fireworks, Disneyland forever. Thank you guys so much for listening to the Disney Nerds Podcast. Remember, follow us at thedisneynerdspodcast.com. You'll find us on Twitter. You'll find us on YouTube. You'll find us on Instagram, Periscope. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll listen to you next time. Remember, I'm Sam from Sam's Disney Diary. Thanks.
Just imagine, if you were standing right here over 60 years ago, you'd be standing in the middle of an orange grove. One visionary man stood right where you are now, but instead of orange trees, he envisioned a magic kingdom. This man's name was Walt Disney, and his dream would be called Disneyland.
Houston, Sam,
you're
longer
here
of the imagination. Disneyland will never be complete.
Thank you. in my tummy. Time to munch on early lunch and humdy dum dum dum.
Thank you.
Walt Disney said, Disneyland will never be complete. And as the future will show us, with enough imagination, it will continue to build and grow on one enduring promise, that all who journey into its magical gates will feel forever young. And the magic